Welcome to the latest episode in the Lessons from Award-winning Publisher podcast series from Media Voices. I'm Peter Houston, and in this series, I'm setting out to learn all I can about making successful podcasts from the winners of the Publisher Podcast Awards 2020. We're now accepting entries for this year's awards. Stick around and I'll tell you where to get more information about entering your podcast. But first, this episode I'm speaking to another immediate media podcaster, Janine Ratcliffe, Deputy Editor and host for the Olive Magazine podcast, which won the Lifestyle category at this year's awards. Olive is a monthly food magazine featuring recipes and food-inspired travel features. The podcast is now in its fifth year and well established with over 200 weekly episodes. But as always, I wanted to know from Janine how the Olive Magazine podcast got started.
We launched in April 2016, and I think earlier that year, it was kind of February, March, we were sitting in a planning meeting and Laura sat us all down and said, I want to do a podcast. And I was like, okay, one a month? And she went, no, we're going to do one a week. And I just thought she was mad. Me and Laura at the time were big podcast fans anyway, so I could kind of see how it worked. Like, I realized it was all about the chat and the content, and you weren't making a radio show, which I think a lot of people get confused about. You have to have some super edited, slick radio style thing. But the idea was that we would just bring the magazine to life in a different way, and that, all the voices that were in the magazine, either writing recipes or travel pieces or, you know, chefs from restaurants, rather than being in print, they could get a chance to speak to us. And also, given the people who were making the podcast, which is just the editorial team, allowing them to sort of come to life as well. And they got a chance to speak and talk about their favourite things and talk about their interests and their passions as well. So that was really the thinking behind it.
Launching any podcast can feel like a big undertaking. What was the most daunting aspect of launching a weekly podcast right off the bat?
Like, how are we going to do it, basically? Because it was uncharted waters for us. Laura didn't know how to do anything. She got in touch with Acast, and they sent a guy over who, I believe, at the time he was producing Scroobius Pip's podcast. And I was a massive fan of Scroobius Pip at the time, so I was like fangirling him. Oh my God, you produced Scroobius Pip, that's amazing. So he came over to Vineyard House with a little setup, recorder and a couple of mics. And we got a room, and he just said, right, get into groups of two, come up with a subject, and then I'm going to record you talking about it. And we did it, and it was kind of like our little pilot run through. And then after that, we hooked up with Jack, who was our sort of editor who worked out of the Bristol office. And he set us up with a Zoom recorder and some mics. And we used to record in the video studio because it was soundproof. It was so DIY. I can't tell you how DIY it was.
The DIY aspect of launching a podcast is a familiar story. But what was the secret to managing Olive's podcast production in those early days?
At the beginning, we said, let's make it easy on ourselves. We'll do it in kind of three little soundbite sections. So the idea was we try and record between 7 and 10 minutes per section. And we do it on things like someone had just travelled to Rome and it could do 10 minutes on their favourite places to go and visit. Or we had one where we were talking about, there was a poll in the news about like what the nation's favourite biscuits were. So we had like a biscuit off about their favourite biscuits. Or it could just be like me and Adam talking about, barbecue recipes that were in the issue that month. So we started off quite soft with just, you know, the staff talking. And then within sort of 3 or 4 episodes, we'd start to bring in outside guests, but just talking for those short sections of time. So it felt manageable because we would sort of have a planner and we would say, what are we going to talk about next week? Have we got anyone we can bring in? So it was all quite gentle to begin with.
Starting off gently with just your own staff is great advice. But for all of it, at least, guests became an increasingly important feature of the podcast.
I think when I took over the running of the podcast a couple of years ago, I was very much interested in expanding. So we started off in that small way with sections, and the interviews got bigger and bigger, especially when I was doing them. And it wasn't so much interviews as chats, because I just wanted to like have a conversation with someone, and it was all about conversation. When I approach someone, I don't have questions. I just have like things I want to talk about. So I'll have like a little crib sheet of themes, and I'll make sure that, you know, we cover some of them. We might not cover all of them, but my main objective is to get the other person to talk because they're the interesting person. It's giving people the space, you know, to tell their story and to let their personality shine through, and characters as well. There's so many characters out there, and you don't get that with the printed word online, but on podcasts, you know, you're like, who are these crazy food people? So that's been a joy, basically.
Everyone loves a crazy foodie, but how does Janine make sure her guests are comfortable to talk openly?
I might send them an email to say, these are the kinds of things I want to talk about, but I'm not going to throw you like any ringers. Everything will be within your comfort zone about stuff that you know about. And then when we get together, we just kind of warming up and saying how they are and what they've been up to. And, you know, got that little window sometimes where you've only got 45 minutes of someone's time. So you've got a 5-minute window to kind of make friends with them. I've actually, you know, I wouldn't say names, but I've sat with people who are literally at the beginning, I'm literally in my head going, shit, shit, shit. Even though they've agreed to it and we've had email back and forth, and, you know, I always try and go to the person directly. I try not to go through PRs, though it's hard in food. You know, there's been a couple of people where I thought, they're just not going to crack. And then suddenly I'll ask them something, and the smile comes and I'm like, oh, right, we're there. Thank God. Yeah.
And how are those interviews structured?
I'll say to people, we'll chat for around about 30 minutes. I think it's like a comfortable amount of time to talk to somebody, you know, because you kind of establish where they are, the subject you want to talk about, what they're doing in the future. And then we'll go off on little tangents, and it gives you enough time to like explore those tangents and then to kind of come back to what you're talking about. Like I did one yesterday with Ed Kimber, who's like a baking columnist, and he's really kind of experienced. He's got so much knowledge. And we talked about loads of stuff, you know, like how lockdown was affecting him. Then we talked about, he's got a new book coming out about the column. And then we started talking about, you know, how flour is going to be the next revolution. And it was like quite cool because I was like, I was expecting to be talking about how plain flour is ridiculous and how the next thing is going to be flour varieties, which act like plain flour, but actually they come from heritage grains and stuff. And I was like, this is mind blowing. but we you know, we were able to go off on that because I wasn't trying to hold him to some kind of like time constriction or script. So I think that's the difference now, is that it's a lot looser in what we do.
From that DIY setup and staff chats about biscuits, Olive's approach to podcasting has clearly moved on. How does the podcast recording and production setup look 5 years in?
Pretty good, because Immediate Media, who we work for, quite a few brands by beginning of 2020 had launched podcasts. So Immediate put some money into a much more professional setup. So that video recording studio, which still gets used occasionally for video, but not much because they tend to do more stuff out of office, is now set up with like 4 professional mics and a little sound deck thing. I couldn't tell you the technicalities of it. I just know that it's come from our podcast editor in Bristol, Ben, and he told them what to buy and how to set it up. He comes over to record big people like, you know, Tom Kerridge does a podcast for Good Food. So he'll come in and help record that. We still go in and record ourselves. To be honest, though, what we mainly do is we kind of get out in the field quite a lot more. So so we're still using that Zoom recorder. But our last podcast person, Jack, told us to get these mics, and they're called Sennheiser MD46. Basically, they're like noise cancelling. So he said, you guys are constantly doing stuff like going to a festival or going to like a gin distillery where it's a bit noisy. These mics are apparently used in F1 motor racing. So basically they isolate your voice. I could be sitting talking to you in the noisiest coffee shop ever, and you'll hear this murmur in the background, but our voices will be completely isolated. Mm-hmm. So it's brilliant if you want to go out in the field and talk to people. Just get your standard Zoom recorder and your and you know this mic, and you're set up for anywhere. You can record anywhere and you will get really good quality of sound.
Janine thinks a lot about sound quality, and I wondered how lockdown had affected the way they recorded the Olive podcast.
it's been a real eye-opener. I was really worried. I remember sitting in a meeting room with Laura the day that told us we had to go and leave the office for the foreseeable future. That was in March. And I was really worried because the sound quality has always been incredibly important to me. I've listened to some horrific podcasts by people who are actually, you know, who've got like proper names and stuff. And I just feel like they feel like their name is enough and they haven't bothered to think about how they're recording. Did no one, or did you not even think yourself that it's going in someone's ears? I mean, it needs to be, you know, it needs to be a nice oral experience. Mm-hmm. So what we do, I set up a Zoom call. Ben, the editor, jumps on at the beginning just to make sure that they're set up properly, though I can do that as well. I kind of know. So we'll get them headphones in, into the laptop, separate iPhone or whatever kind of phone, recording your voice on whatever voice recorder they're using. I'll record on my little Zoom mic, and then we'll separately send the sound files to Ben and he puts them together. The face-to-face thing is quite important for me because when I'm talking to someone, I kind of want to see their face. I mean, I think it helps for people who aren't used to it, certainly, to have a face there that they can kind of react to. The first one we did was a little bit scary because I was like, oh, what if I don't press record? What if this happens? But actually, it's fine. And Ben said, you know, on occasions when someone hasn't recorded, they've actually just patched in the Zoom audio and it's been all right. It's that thing, isn't it, with lockdown, it's just been a constant series of adjustments where you realise that actually things aren't as bad as you think they are.
Like many food titles, the Olive podcast saw a real spike in traffic when people were forced to stay at home. I wondered if the team had done anything to capitalise on the extra attention.
In lockdown, we had a massive boost of listening figures, as in, for example, in February this year, we were on about 10,000 listens a month. It come April, we were up to 20, so we doubled. There was a couple of things. We, at the beginning of lockdown, we decided that we were going to do a kind of dedicated mini series, which we've done a few of, and these have really reaped rewards for us, which is we'll make like five little mini podcasts and we'll release them across a week. So the one we did at the beginning of lockdown was like things like how to make easy bread, how to use your freezer and store cupboard properly, how to stay healthy during lockdown with our nutritionist, you know, talking about frozen food and store cupboard food and dried food and how, you know, that it was just as nutritious. So we released them. I think it was the second or third week. Each of the little episodes we did, not 30 minutes, we sort of said between 12 and 15 minutes. I don't know if that was, I mean, I made that decision. So it was kind of like, it would be much more soundbitey. We planned that one for how useful can we be at this point in time? What are the things that people are going to be searching for? Can we cover it for them so they don't have to go back through 100 episodes and actually 200 odd episodes now and find what they need.
With more how-to content, some of that traffic increase was organic, but the Olive podcast also got a helping hand from some of the platforms.
We were also helped by, we were featured on Apple Podcasts. They'd started a collection called In the Kitchen and that had various different sections and there's one called Food Stories and we were on that little sort of banner. But we definitely got a lift from that. Apple Podcasts has always been the main place where people come through to listen to us from. And then Spotify randomly featured our Easy Bread podcast. And that's now the best performing podcast in the entire series of 200. It's got like 7,000 listens on its own. So it just shows you like the power of those platforms. And, you know, if you manage to get on them.
Traffic is wonderful wherever it comes from. But how is the Olive podcast making money?
The serious thing is, it's not something that it's new. We did one at Christmas, again, trying to cover things that were really useful. Like we did a whole masterclass on turkey, you know, buying it, cooking it, resting it, making leftovers from it.
I need to film that.
Yeah. and previous to that, we'd done one with Activia, which is one of our best sponsors that we ever got. We got quite a decent amount of money, which we did a gut health series. But we did it really responsibly, as in we said to them, you know, if we're going to do it, we want to bring in a proper nutritionist, and we want to talk about different aspects of gut health. And it was absolutely brilliant. It was such a good little series, and people loved that as well.
That idea of taking care over commercial content is a familiar theme in this series. And I asked Janine if the production of a sponsored episode is any different from producing a regular episode.
The past couple of years we've been sponsored by the Pink Lady Photographer Awards. So we've kind of partnered up with them because obviously that's something that we can talk about. So last year we had we had David Loftus, who's a really respected food photographer, on the podcast, and he came in and I interviewed him, and we had such a brilliant, it was honestly one of the best chats I've had on the podcast, because he was so honest about the food photography world. He told me loads of hilarious stories. I wasn't expecting him to come out. He was quite indiscreet. It was brilliant. I was like, this is gold. Keep going. And that was like a sponsored, you know, he's a bit of a maverick, basically. And that was actually sponsored by them, you know, but it didn't feel at all like we were shoehorning something in. It just felt really natural that we were celebrating how food photography's evolved from, you know, when I first started to now, which is hugely. So yeah, it's finding those natural partners where you can both get something out of it as well.
And talking of partnerships, what's the relationship between Olive Magazine and the Olive Magazine podcast?
It should always be able to stand up on its own and be like a standalone platform of the magazine. If there's something in the magazine that is particularly interesting, or we're featuring a writer that we think is great, then we do try and get them on the podcast around about the same time. But we won't be constantly referring to the magazine. We'll be talking about kind of them and their journey and their stories. I think when we started, we definitely were like adhering a little bit more to what was going on in the mag. But now it's kind of taken on a life of its own.
And that's the Olive Magazine podcast, from a DIY spin-off to a distinct media platform with a life of its own. And what did I learn from talking to Janine? Remember, you're not making a radio show. Your podcast doesn't need to be super slick, but it does need to be a pleasant listening experience. Make your podcast easy to produce in the beginning. Record maybe in smaller 5-minute sections. Prepare for interviews, but don't script them. Leave space for the conversation to go off at interesting tangents. If you're going to record on location, get yourself a good interview mic that won't pick up background noise. Care about the commercial content you make every bit as much as you care about your regular episodes, and try to work with natural sponsorship partners. And finally, your publication is the launchpad for your podcast, but the best publisher podcasts develop a life of their own. As always, a big Media Voices thank you to Janine Ratcliffe for taking us through the secrets of Olive Magazine's podcasting success. In the next episode in this lesson series, I'll be learning from veteran audio producer Jeff Jean, who worked on a spin podcast for The Guardian. Entries for the 2021 Publisher Podcast Awards are open, and for more information on this year's expanded category lineup, take a look at publisherpodcastawards.com.